Hey there, you're listening to Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies.
If you enjoy what you hear, go to the iTunes store and leave a review for us. It really helps us get noticed.
And if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can check out our Facebook page. Just search Filmed in Canada Podcast. And you can also reach us by email at filmedincanada@gmail.com.
And feel free to go to our website, filmedincanada.net, for our other content and to leave a comment.
Hey, thanks for streaming or downloading this modest thing called Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies, and my name is Alexander, and I'm also joined today by my best friend in podcasting.
Would that be William?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm flattered. Thanks, podcast friendo.
Yeah, we've been podcast friends for over 2 years now.
At least 2 years, mm-hmm. But the friendship goes beyond that.
Yes. Right? And in those 2 years, we've talked about, is it three movies by David Cronenberg or just two?
I think just two. I think this is the third.
Yeah, Crash and Videodrome.
Yeah. Is this also the third one that is like so directly about the human-technology relationship?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that those are some of his more rewarding movies, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And suddenly this microphone in front of me is looking like it needs to be licked.
Oh, God.
I can't help it. It's not me. It's the podcaster.
Oh, my God. I love the... in all of his movies, the way that he's able to insert sexuality into new and interesting ways is amazing. But particularly in this movie, the massaging and lubricating of bodily orifices
and digital penetration. Yeah. Oh, it's something. Yeah. did we mention yet? This is a recording about existence.
Yeah.
Spelled with a capital X, capital Z.
Yes, and everything else lowercase, mm-hmm. as it turns out.
Yeah.
Or is it transcendence?
Oh, you're giving away too much. Hey, this came out in 1999. So
yes,
we're gonna get into some plot details, which you may or may not care about.
Yeah.
If you do care about it, check out the movie because it's awesome.
My kind of jokey spoiler from a recent episode on, not Laiolo, but the one before that.
Heavy Metal?
Yeah. My kind of joke spoiler about that movie was, it was all a dream.
Yeah.
That kind of applies here.
Kind of?
Yeah.
Kind of not, yeah. This is the big question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess what's interesting is what might be considered a spoiler about this movie isn't really a spoiler because it's just kind of an extension of the themes of the movie and the questioning of reality that goes on throughout, as opposed to it just being this sudden shock ending.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is it's not a movie that lives or dies on a twist.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of the fabric of the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. This came out in 1999, as I said, more specifically in April of 1999.
Yeah.
Another movie came out in March of 1999, which made $400 million.
Yeah.
Compared to Existence's $3 million?
Yeah. And that movie was The Matrix.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Similar themed movies,
mm-hmm.
I think you could say.
Yeah, like shockingly similar.
Yeah. Really.
And not necessarily in their execution, but in the themes and format, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was really unfortunate because Existence got so grossly overshadowed.
Mm-hmm.
I think its reputation has lived on and maybe even increased because of the internet. There's a lot of people who blog or do podcasts about Existence. So
yeah.
Lots of people sing its praises.
Yeah.
And so we're going to contribute to that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons why The Matrix did better. Like, obviously, it had a multi-million dollar marketing budget behind it.
Yeah.
It had, you know, flashy bullet time and all kinds of cool special effects. And yeah, I love that. Like, it's really fucking cool. And mm-hmm. the Wachowskis are some of my favorite filmmakers. But I don't think there was any chance that Existence could have ever competed on the same level.
Not on like a box office level, but yeah. I think in terms of a movie that was looking at virtual reality and how video gaming and that sort of thing was affecting the way that we live in the world or understand our reality. I think it was kind of unfortunate that those kind of got brushed aside because the Matrix was just so much more flashy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has the kind of hero narrative and kind of overly simplified bits and pieces from Eastern mythology that make it digestible for a Western audience and you know, the blue pill, red pill, like all that stuff. It's just really cool and it's really fun. And Existenz is not that. It's gross. It's psychologically distorted. It's a lot more fractured in terms of its narrative. And by the end of it, you're left with a lot more questions, I think, than the Matrix, mm-hmm. which has a lot of those ideas, but is more of an entertainment. And just more of a fun time at the movies, I guess.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one do you watch more?
I honestly haven't seen The Matrix since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to go back and watch it, and I've wanted to do so for this episode. But as is often the case, my ambitions to prepare more than I end up preparing went out the window when I ended up watching this movie last night before we're recording today. So.
Mm. Okay.
I've seen Existenz. I think I've only seen The Matrix once.
Okay,
but I've seen Existenz 3 times.
Ah, yeah. I watched The Matrix when it was in theaters. I think I watched it again when like I got a DVD player, mm-hmm. and so I got that on DVD. But Existenz, I've watched a couple of times, like maybe at least 5 times.
Yeah. I guess my earlier statements about The Matrix being an entertainment, that kind of thing, I guess I don't want to put too much weight in that, given that I haven't seen it in such a long time. Plus, I guess the fact that the Wachowskis' later movies are very kind of philosophically dense. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would want to maybe I would give it more credit than my memory is giving it.
Yeah, I don't think we're dismissing The Matrix.
No,
I don't think we're just saying. The other thing about The Matrix is that the 2 sequels came out. So there was just so much there was so much material Matrix related.
Also Animatrix.
And thank you. That's good. Don't forget Animatrix. Yeah. There was just so much of that given to audiences that I think I had my fill of it by the time we got Matrix Revolutions.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas Existenz, I think I still get a little bit new out of it every time.
Yeah.
Even on this recent viewing, I knew the big beats of the story.
Yeah.
But watching it, I forgot how individual scenes played out.
Yeah. And I think there's some really interesting things that Cronenberg does early in the movie to kind of hint at what might be going on. So I think it'd be interesting to get into those elements as well. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I was picking up on this time watching it.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just again, like if you haven't seen it, we encourage you to see it. But if you don't care, we're going to give you a little plot summary to set the stage.
Yeah.
Also for people who don't remember it, just to recap.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with a group of people. They're a focus group who are going to test a new virtual reality video game type thing. That Allegra Geller has designed. She's like a star video game designer.
Played by Jennifer Jason Leigh.
And just as the demo is getting started, there's an assassin who shows up.
Yeah.
Trying to assassinate the demoness Allegra Geller.
Yes.
She escapes with the help of a marketing...
PR
guy.
Nerd.
Yeah. Played by Jude Law. His name is... character's name is Ted Peichel.
Ted Peichel.
And so they're on the run... But Allegra wants to get hooked up to her video game world because she wants to check if it's been damaged in the assassination attempt. So Ted has to also go in with her as a friendly co-player. And so we explore the world of the game, which is Existenz, at the same time that there's like a faction of
realists
who I wouldn't say they're terrorists
say they're terrorists.
Okay, yeah. Let's call them terrorists.
Like they're functionally trying to pull off like a political coup d'etat.
Well, they don't necessarily have to overthrow a government, but
they're overthrowing the power structure that is I'm forgetting the name of the game company.
Existence by Antenna Research.
Antenna Research, yeah. They're functionally trying to overthrow Antenna Research and destroy the figurehead at the top of it, kind of thing.
Yeah, because of the damage that this technology has done to humanity.
Yeah, yeah. Because people are sort of living within this virtual reality as opposed to enjoying actual reality.
I think that sets the stage.
Yeah. So we have a general understanding of what the movie is. From here on out, we are just going to freely spoil any aspect of the movie because, especially as I was alluding to earlier in the discussion, there's a lot of things that happen early on that kind of hint where the movie is going. And so I feel like we might as well just talk about those as we're talking about the earlier parts of the movie.
Sure. Okay. So why don't we just go through kind of the run of the movie?
Yeah. So they flee the scene of this attempted assassination. And I guess the first kind of gross out moment is when Allegra, goes to remove the bullet from her,
in her shoulder,
from her shoulder. Yeah. And it's actually a human tooth that's mm-hmm. been shot into her body. And it, I guess it's revealed that the gun that was used was, made out of biological parts so that it wouldn't be detected by a metal detector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just kind of a classic creation of, you know, Cronenbergian body horror that he's just able to make a normal thing like a gun so gross. Like even like in Videodrome where the gun fuses with James Woods' hand, and like the wires go into his arm and everything like that. Like he just has to take something that we all know so well and it's just almost like an everyday object when it comes to movies. Is there's always guns in movies, but he turns it into this freakish, disgusting thing. And when that gun shows up later in the movie, it's even more gross because it's covered in gelatin and skin and
He literalizes that weapon as like an extension of your body, but in a really unpleasant way where it is just really kind of gross.
Yeah. So they.
Just an aside. A lot of the shooting, like the bullet effects in the movie, the squib effects and stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you think it was notable that like a lot of the shots kind of hit people on their periphery? There was a couple of chest splatter type things, but a lot of the time, like people get hit in the shoulder or at the side of their face.
Yeah,
it was just, and I thought that was interesting that there was just a lot of like people being chipped away.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you literally see the skin and flesh and blood like almost being removed from them in a weird way. It is a kind of weird effect. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, when Allegra asks Ted to remove the bullet, which is a tooth, he says, "Did someone bite you?" Which is also interesting because if you were to bite someone, you kind of start at the outside and chip away at their body, I guess.
Yeah.
meat.
Yeah, sure. At this point, Allegra says that she needs to get into the game to see if it's damaged in any way, but it's revealed that Ted does not have the, physical apparatus.
He hasn't been installed with a bioport.
Yeah, he's not able to go into the game because he's afraid of the procedure that is required to make that happen. And of course, it couldn't just be a normal experience of playing a video game where you're just using a controller. Of course, you're using a controller, but it's connected to the base of your spine through an umbilical cord looking like thing that has a very phallic insertion point. And, so basically everyone who plays this game has a hole at the base of their spine that this phallic object is inserted into. And that's how they connect to the game. And the game itself operates off of your own internal nervous system and bodily energy and calories, et cetera, as opposed to it being a device made of chips and resistors and how most digital technology is created.
And the game console too is, looks like a, collection of, clitoris
or nipples or
it's like a gooey thing that you have to rub,
and it kind of squeals with excitement when you when you press it in the right way.
Yeah. So that's how they end up at a country gas station, where they meet a character named Gas, played by Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, and so I guess that the thing, like watching it this time around, that is where I kind of got the hint, like, okay, we're already in a fake reality.
Okay.
Because every location that they go to within the quote unquote real world that we're introduced to at the beginning of the movie, which turns out to be at least some level of the video game. Mm-hmm. All the names are just so generic, and mm-hmm. and like the gas station attendant having the name of Gas, like that's something that you would see in a video game that was just kind of hastily put together and yeah. and not fully formed yet, and not the world building hasn't been completed.
Yeah, either it's lazy writing or it's deliberately calling attention to the fact that it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a moment when Ted is getting ready to have the bioport installed, and the movie cuts away to Allegra outside the gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this scene, which like the first few times that I saw it, I guess it didn't really register, except for when she sees that weird CGI creature.
Yeah,
but this scene pretty much gives away, or it strongly hints to the audience that you're not in
yeah.
the reality no, you think
and,
it's in.
And I picked up on that as well, yeah. because it starts with her tracing her hand across a wall,
mm-hmm.
and then she's just kind of admiring her creation in a way.
Yeah.
It's just a moment where she's kind of observing things and just kind of in awe at how real they feel, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah. And she yeah. tests the environment and like she kicks the dirt to see like, oh, it reacts like this.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And it's something that I think, well, obviously I missed it the first time.
Yeah.
But I think that's the giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's when you start a new video game and you figure out your controls, the boundaries of what you can do in the physics and stuff like that. You just explore a bit and you keep pressing the buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so. There's all of these things happening, but I guess I also want to kind of reflect on how it fits within like what Cronenberg explores in his movies and, mm-hmm. and how it's thematically similar to like you said, the other two that we've discussed in the way that they explore technology and how that interacts with human sexuality in Crash and Videodrome. And I guess more so Videodrome, and this movie, the kind of vague corporate threat is always looming in both of those movies, in Existenz and Videodrome.
Okay.
And I guess part of the reason that they go to this country gas station as opposed to seeking help in other ways is that Allegra is not trusting of antenna research and their ability to protect her. She just immediately assumes that when she's got this assassination attempt against her, it could actually be the people who run that company. For whatever reason, who knows, but it could be some internal coup that's going on. And it made me think a lot of Videodrome in the sense that I'm blanking on the generic corporation name in that movie.
But wasn't there like a Japanese company that was buying
American TV stations to like brainwash Americans or whatever. Yeah. And like, but then it's also at an earlier point in the movie, that same company is the one that's running the cathode ray mission to like help people get rid of their TV addictions. Mm. But then it turns out that they're the ones that are creating this new like piece of headgear that it's all completely mixed yeah. up in my head because I just, and they're also like an eyewear company.
I guess there's a
persistent mistrust of corporations and there's a constant murkiness in terms of what their motivations are mm-hmm. and what side they're on.
Yeah. I think that makes sense though. Like if you look at whether it's television broadcasting or automobiles, I mean, there is a corporate control over what the consumer is allowed to have,
mm-hmm.
and yet the consumer or the protagonist in these storylines, they are, you know, they to different degrees, they're obsessed with that product mm-hmm. that they, as you point out, I guess they don't have a control over how it's created for them, but mm-hmm. they can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So turns out Willem Dafoe's a double agent, because like everyone's a double agent in this movie. Yeah. And he has done something to Jude Law's bioport such that when he connects into the game with Allegra Geller, the game sort of gets fried. And so it has to be repaired by Bilbo Baggins.
Played by Ian Holm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how they go to the ski lodge.
Yes.
A ski lodge.
Again, just a generic name, ski club.
Yeah. So he's like a scientist or something.
Yeah.
And he can help repair the pod.
And spoiler alert, he's also a double agent.
Okay, so when they get to Ski Lodge, so now it seems like they're in a safe place. At first, it seems like they're in a safe place.
Yeah.
And it's at this point where they, where Ted and Allegra can enter the existence game. Mm-hmm. And so we go into another level of...
Yeah, within the context of what the movie has presented us thus far, we're going into the first level of the game.
Yeah. So the first unreal reality.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's I really like... this one thing that I hadn't really noticed before or hadn't paid attention to as much is the transitions between the different levels of reality. Mm-hmm. And in this one, just as they're going into the game, Ted stands up as opposed to being lying down on the couch, and he looks up and you see Callum Keith Rennie walking down a set of staircase. And then all of a sudden when they cuts back to Ted, he's now got a different haircut and a different set of clothes on, and mm-hmm. they're inside of a shop. Selling, yeah. I guess, video game products.
Sure. And Allegra gradually changes as well. I like that too. It's like different elements are downloading it, and they complete their downloads at different times or something.
Yeah. Yeah. But it creates this really smooth transition between the different levels. And again, it's kind of thematically resonant as well, because throughout the movie, you're not really sure whether, you know, are they in the game? Are they not in the game? What level of the game are they in? How deep down does this go? Kind of like the multiple dream levels of Inception. And if we have time, I'd like to talk a bit about Inception and how it kind of compares in my mind to this movie. But
I think we will.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the other one that I'm thinking of is when they're in the Chinese restaurant and Ted just out of nowhere, he's like kind of uncomfortable with the game or uncomfortable with the fact that their bodies might not be safe. Mm-hmm. In the level of quote unquote reality, and so he just gets up and exclaims, "I put existence on pause," or whatever he says. Mm-hmm. And when he just kind of falls flat onto the table in the restaurant, but the table has actually turned into the bed that they're on in the hotel in the ski lodge. Mm-hmm. And when it transitions back to that, he's now in the ski lodge on the same bed. And so it's just this visual transition mm-hmm. that I really enjoy.
Mm, no, it's good. I like that they started in this door.
Yeah.
Because it looks so unspectacular.
Yeah.
And I think you see in a lot of online games now, there is a store component, right?
Yeah.
You can buy your upgrades and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what they're doing. This is in 1999, before online, mobile-based online games had taken over. But it seems very forward-thinking of David Cronenberg's understanding of how the video game world is going to work.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that I'm thinking of is Pokemon on Game Boy Color existed at the time.
Okay.
And that had a very prominent store slash hospital component where you'd have to go in to heal your Pokemon, or you'd have to go in to buy potions and elixirs and whatever. Yeah. So I haven't played enough video games to know, my video game history to the degree that I could say in 1999 that was already an established part of.
Oh, nor can I. I'm just.
But regardless, I think this movie is very prophetic, and just as Videodrome was, just as I don't know if Crash has really materialized in the same way.
Yeah.
Videodrome and Existence in particular are very forward thinking for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So in the first level of the game, where they're visiting the store, they actually have to buy the game that they're going to go into again.
Yeah.
So in that level, they poured into another level.
Yeah.
So we get into a second level of the game, which as you said, it brings to mind Inception.
Yeah.
And I can't help but see this as the precursor to that idea of nest realities.
No, I know.
That,
yeah.
That is really, it's explored exceedingly well in Inception, but here is an, I think it's done quite well here too. It's, yeah. I mean, it's easy to follow at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess like you say that it's done exceedingly well in Inception. And I think on a technical level, it's phenomenal what goes on in Inception, but it doesn't connect with me on a thematic level, and it doesn't connect with me in the way that like a dream should operate.
Mm-hmm.
And it also doesn't connect with me just in terms of how it's all wrapped up, how Inception ends as a movie really kind of pisses me off.
Okay.
Whereas this movie, it ends and I'm like, holy fuck, that is one of the best things I've ever seen.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the game that they poured into within the game,
yeah,
is, I don't think it's called Chinese Restaurant.
But no. But they do go to the Chinese restaurant. No, the game within the game, whatever level we're at this point, they're just in a factory where they're creating more game pods.
Right. It's Trout Farm. Yeah. Firstly, it's Trout Farm.
Which when you say that the video game store, you like that because it's so unremarkable. I like the whole movie for that reason, because the whole game is essentially just nothing. Like there's not really anything going on other than all these different levels of kind of corporate espionage and spies and, mm-hmm. These realist terrorists,
yeah.
Or revolutionaries, I guess you could say, if, to use another word. Like that's really the only kind of quote unquote interesting thing that's happening. Everything else about the game is just very banal and like it's gross, but, it's not really entertaining in any way. And, I feel like that's a really good representation of like how easy it is to be entertained by something and how easy it is to just exist within this alternate reality. And, like just for the fact that it feels real, like that is stimulating. The VR goggles that you can put on now, a lot of them, you're not even really executing like game objectives. You're just kind of looking around a room and it's like, oh my God, it feels so real. And that's enough for people, which is just so strange. but this movie kind of anticipated that happening, that just going through the motions of, you know, chopping up these kind of modified amphibian creatures on an assembly line, that is enough to be entertained by a game and for it to be almost this drug, because like Allegra Geller, you can see that it's so clear that she has this addiction to it. Or even Willem Dafoe's character is like, you know, you changed my life, because he's like, well, you know, you're just a gas station attendant. He's like, well, that's, you know, only a portion of who I am.
Yeah.
The other part is, you know, me as this game character.
Yeah.
And I think there was some shitty Bruce Willis movie a couple of years ago. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a similar kind of thing where like people uploaded their consciousnesses into these game worlds and didn't actually exist in reality. And I guess we were talking about Ready Player One off mic. I haven't seen that yet, but I guess the idea that a virtual reality is more interesting, that's been explored a lot of times, but I guess in other movies they try to make it even better than the real world. Or like Dwight Schrute in The Office, like he gets obsessed with Second Life, which that's another game where literally nothing happens. You just wander around and like talk to people, but you can also fly.
Okay.
And so that's that's just enough to entertain people.
Well, I've noticed I don't play video games as much as I used to, but for example, Red Dead Redemption. I mean, it's set in the Old West and you're a gunslinger and you got to go on your revenge mission. But as you go from town to town, you find little mini games to play within the game. So you could go to a town and you could play, you could throw horseshoes, or you could play poker and stuff like that. Or is it blackjack? I can't remember. But this, the idea of like, you could do all these things these mundane things you would do in real life. Yeah. Like just have a, like sit down for a card game, but you can do it within the reality of a game. Suddenly yeah. it makes it somehow it amplifies it and makes it a bigger thing. Like now I have to go into my game so I can play this card game with these virtual characters. Yeah. Again, it's something that I think at the time that Existence came out, maybe it wasn't as widespread, but I think it's all over the place in games now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And Jude Law's character says, it's Allegra who says something like, you don't know why you're playing the game until you play the game.
Yeah.
So there isn't something to entice you into it other than if you do it, you won't leave it.
Yeah. And it's also interesting that the game takes on the characteristics of the people playing it.
Mm.
Like it's not sort of predetermined where the game is going to go. By the end of the movie, it's kind of revealed that the revolutionary aspect of it was not expected to be an element by the game designer, and he's kind of concerned by that, and that kind of leads into the ultimate mm-hmm. ending of the movie. But they go into this second or third or fourth level, whatever it is, and they're just chopping up amphibious creatures.
Yeah, and they get a mission while they're at Trout Farm.
Yeah.
And the mission is go have lunch.
Yeah. and they're given that mission by a strangely accented Don McKellar.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's kind of got weird accents in this movie. And that's another thing that I really like about it, because by the end, everyone's reflecting on the game experience that they've had, and they're like, oh man, like that accent was terrible. And again, that's another element of kind of playing with the expectations of what the movie should be as well. Because at a certain point, I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she says, God, like this guy's acting is terrible. And I was like, oh no, it's definitely deliberate. And then sure enough, like 2 seconds later, he goes into a game loop. It's mm-hmm. the kind of balding guy that's been in a bunch of Cronenberg movies. He's a Canadian guy. The one that was running the game store, the video game store. Do you know what that guy's name is?
Oh, I don't know.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
But I know he had a small part in Dead Ringers, and okay. he's been in a bunch. And I think he might have been in some earlier stuff as well. But he's not getting the proper lines fed to him, and so he just goes into this loop where he's just kind of staring at the ceiling and nodding his head repeatedly. Yeah, I think that's a really smart choice to not make it this perfectly polished. Mm-hmm. film experience in the sense of having all of the actors, having all the performances be more calibrated to a movie, but they're more calibrated to the experience of, again, playing an unfinished game or something that's just been kind of
mm-hmm.
poorly written and poorly voice acted.
Yeah.
Because certainly at the time, there would have been a lot less effort put into those side character elements of playing a game. It was more about the gameplay aspects of it and not so much the storytelling.
Yeah, and I just think the technology at that time too, it would have been a bit more like characters, like the background characters, that I think their movements would have been a lot stilted back then than they are now.
Yeah.
That's the thing that the movie really gets right is like the rules of engagement within a game.
Yeah.
That if these characters that are game based aren't receiving the right, if you're not pressing the right buttons, that you can't get the next thing. I think that's something the movie really gets right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that the movie gets right is when it is in the Chinese restaurant, when Jude Law gets, when he assembles the gun.
Yeah.
And he says, I have an urge to kill someone.
Yeah.
I think, which I think perfectly sums up the majority of video games.
Yeah.
Is you go in, you turn on a game because it gives you a chance to kill something.
Yeah. Yeah, because you wander around Grand Theft Auto, which I was recently just by chance reading an article about how that is the most profitable game in history and has made billions more dollars than any movie ever.
Oh, Grand Theft Auto 4?
5.
5?
5, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so not even just the whole franchise. That individual game has sold like more than 90 million copies and has made so much profit and wow. blah, blah, blah. That game is literally just an open world where you can go around and kill as many people as you want and get as much attention from the police as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that wasn't something that I really registered when he says, oh, I have this sudden urge to kill something. I wasn't thinking that of that in terms of it being a blatant statement about why we play video games. Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's really no reason why he kills the waiter.
No, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Except... And then it's revealed later that he was, again, a double agent.
Right.
Or maybe a single agent. I don't know. I think he might have been the only character in the movie that was consistently on one side the whole time, except no one actually knew that he was on that side until after the fact.
But it doesn't matter because it's just just that Ted can fulfill his purpose of kill someone is the point of many of the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I when everyone was revealing their allegiances, I was kind of losing track.
And then so he kills the guy. Then he's told by they go back out to the other level of the game. I can't remember exactly how, but they're talking to Callum Keith Rennie, and he's like, "No, that guy was your."
Well, they because Dominic Keller he says like this person was a double agent, and you have to do this thing.
Yeah.
So he sends them back into Trout Farm, where they try to port into a diseased pod.
Yeah.
And then that experience goes badly, and then Dominic Keller shows up to torch them with a flamethrower.
Yeah. Except when he torches the diseased pod, spores start flying everywhere.
No, the spores. Yeah, the spores.
That was so good. I broke out laughing. I didn't remember that line at all. He's just like, no, not the spores.
Yeah. And it's from there that they go, it seems like they go back up a level because this game is compromised or concluded. And so they're back at Ski Lodge.
Yeah.
But then the question comes up of whether they're really out of the game because Ted asks that question. Ted suspects that they're not out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. He suspects that they're not out of the game, but then later on when Allegra kills Callum Keith Rennie's character, who shows up again as this kind of militant revolutionary, when she kills him and she's just kind of like gleefully just like, oh, that was a lot of fun. He's like, what have you done? Like, that's a real person or whatever. So he's not 100% sure what level they're in.
Or is that a story? Because once Allegra kills Callum Keith Rennie, then Jude Law reveals his allegiance in that level. So it seems like he knows what level he's on.
Yeah.
Right. So then we come up to another level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we exit Transcendence.
Yeah.
At that point. And we're close to the end of the movie.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone has been testing a game, which we discover has been designed by the Don McKellar character, or another Don McKellar, character.
Yeah,
did I finally say that right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So the movie has been about testing a game, just not the game that we thought we were seeing tested.
Right. Yeah. Right. And again, just the fact that the game that he created is essentially about creating a game. it's just kind of a ridiculous meta commentary, but it's also another example of just how little entertainment there needs to be in a video game for people to find it entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like The Sims.
Yeah.
Where, do they still make The Sims?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Where essentially you're just recreating a house life.
Yeah.
Right. So,
but you can also be a vampire.
Oh, okay. I remember being a burglar, but
where it gets to that endpoint and you get to the Transcendence level is where I really feel like this movie transcends the kind of entertaining commentary on video games and just having fun with that whole framework. And becomes this kind of haunting representation of like what reality is and how difficult it really is for the human mind to even just grasp, are we in a real thing right now?
Mm.
Or is this just some
just
simulation?
Yeah.
Which The Matrix explores, which, you know, what's his name from Tesla? Why am I blanking on his name? The guy who runs Tesla.
Elon Musk?
Yeah, Elon Musk. He legitimately thinks that we're in an AI simulation right now.
Really?
That like he fundamentally believes that.
Brains in a jar.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's just that's kind of a base philosophical question that's been asked for decades at this point.
Yeah.
And this movie becomes a really interesting example of that of that thought experiment, I guess you could say.
Well, that was very interesting to because you've taken this up a level to our experience of being the audience sitting watching this thing on a TV screen or on a movie screen. Like, this is enough stimulus for us to exist.
Yeah,
that we're entertained, we're distracted enough that we can continue in our day to day routine because this is enough.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I guess to frame it all. They get out of the game, and then Don McKellar's character, who is speaking to Sarah Pauly, who is kind of the moderator of this game testing, and he says to her, you know, I'm kind of concerned at the anti-game aspects of this whole experience. That wasn't something that I anticipated, and then it's revealed that Allegra Geller and Ted Peichel, who are a couple in the quote-unquote real life of what's going on, it's revealed that they snuck a gun underneath their dog's fur into this experience, and they shoot him and Sarah Pauly's character for some reason.
So they're the realists, terrorists.
Who are wanting to kind of destroy the whole game experience. But then it ends with them going to the character who was the Chinese restaurant waiter in the whatever level of existence. And they're kind of pointing their guns at him, and he says, like, oh, but, you know, we're still in the game, right? And then it cuts back to them pointing guns at him, and then it ends. And I love that so much.
Okay. Now, so it's a question. It's a question of, are we in the game? Are we out of the game?
Yeah.
So you love this kind of an ending, this question mark ending, but
I hate Inception.
Said, yeah. Cause Inception does the same thing, right?
Inception does not do the same thing. And so what Inception does
is it
spins the top and it's maybe kind of starts to wobble, but Leonardo DiCaprio is not even looking at it. So he doesn't even fucking care what his reality is. He's just happy to be with his kids.
Yeah.
So the top spinning at the end is just a fuck you to the audience to say, like, oh, you don't know if it's real or not. Do you know?
No,
let's find out.
No, actually, but you just said what is important about that is that it doesn't matter to him whether the top topples.
It doesn't matter to him, but it matters that Christopher Nolan wants to fuck with the audience and be like, oh, you don't know whether it's real, and I'm never going to tell you. Whereas Existenz, what it's really representing is that everyone within this world, their understanding of reality is so distorted that they have no idea what is real and what isn't at this point. And so all of the characters in the movie do not know if they're actually in real life or in the game.
Okay.
And that's just fundamentally more interesting.
Okay. So you're on the side of the realists?
No, I'm just on the side of good storytelling. And I don't think that the ending of Inception is good storytelling.
Okay. So, all right. Well, are we going to, as a reference point, are we going to compare this against Inception or against The Matrix?
I guess I have a more clear understanding of Inception. So I'd compare it against Inception.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess because I've seen it more recently. Yeah.
Sure. All right. Well, I think it's a fair comparison. And I guess the box office already made the comparison between this and The Matrix for us. So.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, except that I hold Inception to pretty high. How about you?
I don't really, cause it just, okay. like, it just, like, the fundamental aspect of it not really representing dreams in my mind.
Okay.
It's just a James Bond movie with a little bit of flair, I guess.
Sure. Right.
And for that reason, coupled with not liking the ending, it sits a lot lower in my estimation. So I would say that Existenz is Inception plus 6.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. You're making it hard for me because, I like what both movies do with their material.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, Existence is inception zero.
Okay, nice.
So
nice.
All right. Okay, unfortunately, we have to unplug from this podcast.
Nice.
So thanks for listening, and hope you enjoyed that. Leave us your comments on our
Facebook page.
Talk to you next time, Alexander.
Catch you later.